the stroller as she walked alongside it. The little girl looked right. Her face was turned away, but the fluffy blonde hair seemed the same. Her size fit the profile. Alex kept walking and beat the mother and daughter to the exhibit. She parked her stroller in the designated space beside the bathrooms, inconspicuously wiping the handle with the hem of her shirt before she removed her backpack and shrugged into it. Now that she was fairly certain the woman was Aaron and that Aaron had her own stroller, she didn't need this one. She located the woman and child dawdling along the trail. A larger group had caught up to them and flowed around them from both sides. Alex could see the woman's face clearly now. It was definitely Karsten's daughter. Aaron had paused to offer Olivia a sippy cup. The path was getting more crowded. It was hot, and the wig was making her head itch and sweat. The straw hat wasn't helping. Alex focused on an empty bench about 10 feet ahead of the duo. There was another large crowd behind the first. If she timed it right, she could intercept Aaron at the bench while the second crowd was passing. Alex moved purposefully back the way she'd just come, watching through her dark glasses to see if anyone was paying attention to her. The first group, a loud extended family, it looked like, with several toddlers, multiple parents, and one older woman in a wheelchair, enveloped her for a moment. She dodged through them and then slowed a bit. She was almost to the bench. The second crowd was all adults, foreign tourists on a day trip, she guessed, many of them wearing fanny packs. And they reached Aaron as she was almost to the bench. Alex moved against the flow until she was just ahead of her quarry. As Aaron passed a foot away from the bench, Alex turned, twisting around an older man, and pretended to stumble. She reached out and grabbed Aaron's hand on the stroller handle. Her palm mashed the pouch of clear fluid and forced it empty with one strong squeeze. "Hey," Aaron said, turning. Alex ducked back, twisting partially behind the closest guest. Aaron came face to face with the bald septuagenarian.
"Excuse me,"
he said hesitantly to both of them, not sure how he'd become entangled. He pulled free of Alex and stepped around Aaron in the stroller. Alex watched as Aaron blinked once, then again. Her eyelids seemed to get stuck on the second blink. Alex jumped forward and grabbed Aaron around the waist as she started to crumple, then jerked her toward the bench so that they fell heavily onto it together. Alex jammed her elbow against the wooden back. It would leave a bruise, but one she could easily cover. Aaron was taller and weighed more than Alex, so Alex wasn't able to keep them from slumping awkwardly. Alex loosed a slightly manic laugh. Hopefully anyone watching would think they were playing around. The little girl was singing to herself inside the stroller. She hadn't seemed to notice that she'd stopped moving. Alex extricated herself from the mother and pulled the stroller closer, angling it so that Olivia was facing away from Aaron. Aaron lolled on the bench, her head falling onto her right shoulder and her mouth hanging open. A third conglomeration of visitors moved past them. No one stopped. Alex was operating quickly, so she couldn't keep close tabs on any reaction, but no one had raised an alarm yet. She pulled the bucket hat lower over Aaron's face, shading her lifeless expression. Out of the side pocket of her backpack, Alex drew the little perfume bottle. She reached around the edge of the stroller's shade and pressed the nozzle down for 2 seconds. The singing ceased, and then Alex felt the light thud through the plastic frame of the stroller as the child fell back against the seat. Moving as casually as she could, Alex patted Aaron's shoulder, then stood up and stretched. "I'll get her some lunch. You go ahead and rest," Alex said, smoothing the wig under her hat in case her tumble had disarranged it. She glanced around, eyes hidden behind her glasses. No one seemed to be focused on the little tableau she'd created. She grasped the stroller's handle and started moving back toward the parking lot. At first, she kept the pace easy. She looked toward the animal cages like the others were doing. As she got farther from the bench, she began moving faster. A mother with an afternoon appointment. Outside the bathroom at the visitor center, she parked the stroller and pulled Olivia into her arms. The child had to weigh over 30 pounds and felt heavier because her body was slack. Alex tried to arrange the unconscious child into the same position she'd seen other parents use, straddling one hip, legs on either side, head cradled on the shoulder. It didn't feel like she'd gotten it right, but she had to move anyway. She gritted her teeth and walked as quickly as she could through the gate. She wished she'd been able to park closer, but eventually, with sweat soaking her t-shirt, she reached the car. Alex hadn't had time to get a car seat. She glanced around surreptitiously to see if anyone was watching, but the area of the parking lot she was in was mostly full, and the people arriving now were far away. The early quitters had already left. She was alone. She laid the child on the back seat and wrapped a seatbelt around her waist. Then she covered Olivia with a blanket to conceal her. Alex straightened up and checked for witnesses again. No one was nearby. No one was watching her. She pulled a syringe from the inside pocket of her pack and leaned in to administer the drug to the sleeping child. She'd calculated the dose for someone weighing 30 to 40 pounds. It should keep Olivia under for about 2 hours. Alex turned the car on and cranked up the air conditioning. She started breathing again for what felt like the first time since she'd entered the zoo. Phase one was successful. Aaron would wake up in 45 minutes, more or less. Alex was sure that paramedics would be attending to her by then. When she woke, she'd sound the alarm about her missing daughter. The zoo would be searched first, then the police would be brought in. Alex had to be in position when Aaron realized her daughter had been taken, that she'd not merely wandered off while her mother was having some sort of seizure. Alex was 85% sure which call Aaron would make first. She really hoped that Val would be done working her magic by the time she arrived at the new hiding place, so Alex would know exactly which plan was moving forward. Not because she'd made up her mind as to which outcome she wanted most. Going in alone, that was suicide. But taking Daniel, was that murder-suicide? Maybe Val's confidence in herself was misplaced. Maybe Daniel would just look like himself in a wig. Alex could do it alone. She'd just make it very clear what would happen to Olivia if she, Alex, didn't live through the night. That would keep Carson in line, wouldn't it? She didn't want to think about the things Carson could set in motion, the traps he could lay so that once he had Olivia back, Alex would be his. Alex called Val as she approached the new building, and when she pulled into the underground garage, Val was waiting by a set of elevators with a wheeled cart. It looked like something a hotel visitor would receive room service on. The garage was otherwise empty of other people. Alex couldn't spot any cameras, but she kept her body between the open back car door and the best view inside. Neither Val nor Alex spoke. Alex shifted the sleeping child to the bottom shelf of the cart, then rearranged the blanket around her so her shape was obscured. This elevator was more normal than the one that led to Val's penthouse, just a silver box, as in most of the buildings where Alex had lived. It made her nervous that the box would suddenly slow and the doors would open, exposing them. Val must have felt similarly. She kept her hand on the button for the 16th floor, as if holding it down would guarantee them express service. While the elevator climbed, Alex noticed Val's expression for the first time. It was a little too stimulated. Alex hoped Val wasn't heading into some kind of power-mad version of a sugar rush. The elevator doors opened to an empty hallway. It was a nice building, with fancy moldings and marble floors, but it looked pedestrian after Val's other place. Val pushed the cart down the little hall, motioning for Alex to go ahead. "Number 1609, on the end. It's not locked," she said. And the eager tone of her voice made Alex wary again. Though maybe if Val got hyped up enough, she'd change her mind and come with Alex for the main event. Alex walked into the apartment in a hurry. There was a lot to set up, and she needed to be fast. She barely took in the routine living room kitchen spread, the fabric-shrouded windows, or the beige color scheme. She noted an open door on the far wall, revealing a brightly lit room with a queen bed, and headed for it. She could see some of her duffel bags leaning against the flowered bedspread. She was halfway to the door before she really absorbed the whole space, and then her eyes focused on the man standing in the dimly lit kitchen. Even though she'd been expecting something, it didn't stop her from spooking. She jumped a step back, her thumbs automatically going to the little hatches of her poisoned rings. "Well?" he asked. The tall man in the cheap black suit waited, fighting a smile. "Told ya," Val said from behind her. and Alex could hear the smug grin on her face without looking. The man looked Nordic, with his fair skin and pale white blonde hair. His blonde beard was neatly trimmed and reminded her of a college professor's. His eyebrows were so pale against his forehead they were nearly invisible, completely changing the look of his eyes and his forehead. The hair around the edges of his head was straight, short, and neatly combed. The top of his head was pale, shiny, and totally bald. It changed the perceived shape of his head and made him look 10 years older. He wore thin silver glasses, and his cheeks were unexpectedly round. His most striking features were his bright, icy blue eyes, framed by nearly white lashes. "You look like a Bond villain," Alex blurted out.
"Is that good?"
Daniel asked, his voice not quite right. It was clipped somehow, a little slurred. Alex felt her heart sink as she more closely examined the transformation. If she hadn't been looking specifically for a disguised version of Daniel, she would have walked right past this man on the street. Even if she had been looking for Daniel, only his height would have made this man a suspect. As the despair settled sickeningly into her stomach, Alex knew she'd really been counting on Val's failing. "Val did a good job," Alex said, and then she started moving again. "Let's get Olivia set up." Einstein was sniffing around the blanket-covered child. He whimpered quietly, ill at ease.
"Is it good enough?"
Daniel persisted, while pulling the child out from under the cart and cradling her against his chest. "Let me think about it while I do this," Alex hedged. Daniel laid Olivia on the flowered coverlet, smoothing the sweaty fluffs of hair back from her forehead. It took Alex only a few seconds to get the IV bags hanging. One clear, one white, and opaque, and then a very small bag with a dark green fluid inside. She quickly placed the IV catheter using the smallest needle she had, and then started the fluids. "Back out of the way," she told Daniel. Alex pulled up the camera on a phone Val had given her, left behind by a friend, Val said, and snapped a few pictures of Olivia sleeping. She flipped through them and found one that she decided would do.
"This is my least favorite part of the plan," Daniel muttered.
She glanced up and saw his pained expression. It looked strange on his new face. "Let's hope Karsten feels similarly." His frown deepened. Alex took his hand and pulled him from the room. The way he was holding his mouth made the round shape of his cheeks more prominent. "What did she do to your face?" Alex asked. Daniel stuck two fingers in his mouth and pulled out a little piece of plastic.
"These make it a little hard to talk."
With a sigh, he replaced the plastic, and his cheek rounded out again. Val waited for them in the big living room, eyes still lit up with her success.
"That baby's not going to wake up, right?" she asked.
"Right. Good.
I wouldn't know what to do with a kid. Now, what do you think? Totally altered, yes?"
Alex looked at Daniel again, and her shoulders slumped. He was thicker around the middle, too. She hadn't noticed that before. It all looked so real.
"You don't think it's good enough, do you?"
Daniel asked.
"It's good enough," Val answered for her. "And she knows it. That's why she looks so glum. She'd much rather risk my life than yours."
Daniel looked at Alex, waiting for her answer. "Val's right, except for the part about risking her life. I don't want to risk anyone's." Val snorted. Daniel grabbed Alex's hand and pulled her against his chest.
"It's going to be fine," he murmured. "We can do this together. Your plans always work. I will follow your instructions to the letter, and we'll make it through, I promise."
Alex squeezed her eyes tight, trying to force the tears back into their ducts.
"I don't know, Daniel. What am I doing?"
He kissed the top of her head.
"Cut it out," Val interrupted. "You two are making me jealous, and that's never a safe thing to do."
Alex opened her eyes and pulled away, brushing at Daniel's suit to make sure she hadn't left any makeup on it. "I see you had time to get the things I needed from the Batcave. This toolbox is perfect."
"More than perfect. Check the fifth drawer down. I packed the rest how you asked,"
Daniel told her.
"Do you want to go through it before I put it in the car?"
"That's a good idea."
The silver toolbox, one of the props from Kevin's stash, she assumed, had wheels and a pull-up handle, like a suitcase, but unlike a suitcase, many locking drawers that pulled forward out of its face. She went swiftly through the top drawers, identifying the location of the different drugs by the color rings on the syringes. The syringes were stacked in the rubber trays she usually stored them in. The next drawer down had a variety of scalpels and razor blades. She wouldn't need so many. The point was to make the drawer look full. Saline bags and tubing were next, along with needles and catheters in different sizes. The next compartment was deeper. It held her pressurized canisters and several random chemicals from Kevin's stores. The second-to-last drawer was key. It held another tray of syringes, these empty, and seemed shallower than the last. She traced the edges of the bottom of the drawer. Of course Kevin would have something like this. She could fit her fingernails around and lift up the false bottom. She peeked at what was underneath. "Let's hope Karsten's up for some Oscar-level acting," she murmured to herself. She went through the final, deepest drawer, where Daniel had stowed her more ostentatious props. The blowtorch, the wire snips, the pliers, along with several arbitrary tools Daniel had added from the items available in Kevin's hoard. There was one more useful thing she needed, just a tiny configuration of wires that she'd picked up the first time they'd visited the local bat cave. She pulled it from her backpack now and hid it in the third tray of the first drawer, under a syringe. She would want easy access to that one. Alex straightened. "Perfect. Thank you." "You," Val said, pointing to Daniel. "Get to the rendezvous point. You," she continued, moving her index finger toward Alex's face. "Let's fix you up and get going. The clock is ticking." She motioned to a set of double doors across the room. "I'll be there in 30 seconds, Alex promised. Val rolled her eyes. "Fine. Have your little goodbye scene." She turned and walked through the doors. "Alex," Daniel began. "Wait." She took his hand again and led him out the front door, pulling the toolbox with her free hand. He had the big first aid bag slung over his shoulder. Einstein tried to follow and then whined when she shut the door on him. They walked down the quiet hall to the elevator. Alex pressed the button. When the door slid apart, Daniel walked in and she followed, putting one foot across the breach to hold it open. She dropped the toolbox's handle and reached up to hold Daniel's face between her hands. "Listen to me," she said quietly. "In the glove compartment of the sedan, there's a manila envelope. There are two sets of IDs, passports, driver's licenses, and a bunch of cash."
"I don't look that much like Kevin now."
"I know, but people age, lose hair. You can toss the glasses, shave, dye your hair back to brown, and if things go badly, you'll need to do all of that. Then get to the nearest airport. Get on any plane that's leaving North America, okay?"
"I won't leave you behind."
"When I say go badly, I mean that I won't be around for you to wait for." He stared at her with that odd new version of his troubled face. "Okay?" she repeated insistently. He hesitated, then nodded. "Good," she said, trying to sound like that discussion was closed. She wasn't feeling the conviction behind his nod, but there wasn't time to argue about it. "You stay quiet tonight," she instructed. "Don't speak to anyone unless you have to. Think like an underling. You're just there to drive the car and carry the bags, okay? This is just a paycheck. None of what's happening means anything to you. No matter what you see, it doesn't affect you. You have no emotional response. You got that?" He nodded seriously.
"Yes."
"If things get dicey, it will make sense for you to run. This isn't your problem."
"Right,"
he agreed, but his answer was less decided this time. "Here." She yanked the gold ring from her finger. It was the bigger of the two. She removed his arms from around her and tried it on all his fingers. As with Kevin, it fit only on his pinky. At least she was able to get it all the way down over his knuckles. Hopefully, it wouldn't look too out of character. "Be extremely careful with this," she told him. "Slide this little hatch out of the way if you need to use it. Whatever you do, don't touch the barb. If you're not in the act of using it, keep it closed. But if you're trying to get out and someone's in your way, all you have to do is put that barb in contact with his skin.
I got it.
Alex looked into the startling blue eyes, searching for Daniel behind the strangeness of his oddly simple disguise. She was out of instructions, and the feelings she wanted to share with him didn't seem to have corresponding words.
I don't know how to go back to my old life, she said, trying to explain.
I don't know how to do that anymore, without you. Having you as my liability is the best thing that ever happened to me.
He smiled just a little bit, though it didn't reach his eyes.
I love you too, he whispered.
She tried to smile back. Daniel put his hands on her shoulders and kissed her for one lingering second. Then he smiled at her again, unfamiliar and familiar at the same time. She took a step away from him.
I told you I'd be there when you needed backup, he said.
The elevator doors closed. Chapter 29. There was no wig involved this time, just a quick trim that left her real hair looking like it had an actual style. A pixie cut, that's what people called it, she thought. The color was medium blonde now, and it lightened up her complexion. It was also flattering to her face shape, the way her real hair hadn't been since... She couldn't remember the last time her hair had been attractive.
Seriously, Alex said, did you go to cosmetology school?
Val applied mascara with a hand as steady as a surgeon's.
No, I never liked school that much. It always seemed a little bit like prison to me. I wasn't going to sign up for extra. I just liked playing with my appearance, having a face for every mood. I practice a lot.
I think you've got a real aptitude. If being the most beautiful woman on the planet ever gets dull, you could open a salon.
Val flashed her brilliant teeth. I never thought I would want an actual woman friend. It's more fun than I imagined.
Ditto. Just curious, and you don't have to answer, but is Val for Valerie?
Valentine or Valentina. It changes depending on mood and circumstance.
Ah, Alex said. That fits better.
It's very me, Val told her. It's not the name I was born with, of course.
Whose is? Alex murmured.
Val nodded. It's only logical. My parents didn't even know me when they picked a name out. Of course it didn't fit.
I never really thought of it that way, but it does make sense. My mother picked a name for a much more feminine kind of girl.
My parents evidently assumed I would be very boring. I cleared that misconception up pretty quickly.
Alex chuckled once. As was so often true lately, the laugh carried with it the barely disguised sound of panic. It was nice to talk like she imagined normal people did, to try to forget that this might be the last friendly, mundane conversation she would ever have. But she couldn't keep her thoughts focused on pleasantries.
Val patted her head. It's going to be okay.
You don't have to pretend to have faith in the plan. That's only for us suckers who are putting ourselves into the line of fire.
It's not a bad plan, Val assured her. I'm just not a risk taker. I never have been.
She shrugged.
If I were brave, I would do it.
It wasn't fair for me to ask you.
No, it was. I do care about Kevin. Part of me just can't believe that what you say is happening to him is actually happening. He's always seemed so invulnerable. That's what pulls me to him. Like I said, I'm not brave, so I'm fascinated with people who are. The other part of me.
Val leaned back for a moment, the little brush with lip gloss on it trembling suddenly. Her face was still perfect, but suddenly it was the doll's face again. Exquisite, but empty.
Val, are you okay?
Val blinked and her face came back to life.
Yes.
You'll leave here after your part, right?
Absolutely. I have lots of friends who can protect me. Maybe I'll go visit Zhang. I'm sure he's still stuffy, but he has an amazing place in Beijing.
Beijing sounds lovely, Alex half-sighed. If she lived through tonight, she'd do whatever she had to in order to get her hands on a passport. She'd blow the rest of her savings, all of Kevin's drug money. To be out of the easy reach of the American government sounded like a practical version of heaven. If, though when was probably more appropriate, Alex thought to herself. If you don't hear from any of us by sunrise, go see Zhang. If I can, I'll call you from a payphone. Val smiled a little. You have my number. Her lips pursed. You know, there's a guy. I might be able to get my hands on a service dog vest. Alex stared at her for a moment, then felt her face start to crumple. With the new plan, the suicidal plan, there was really no way for Alex to keep Einstein safe. That's a brilliant idea. That makes me feel better. Her positive words didn't match her expression. Val reached out with one bare foot and stroked it along Einstein's back. His tail thumped once against the marble floor, but without much enthusiasm. Okay, Val said in a brighter voice. You're done. I'll throw on my things and we're off. While Val disappeared into the closet, Alex checked out her face. Val had done another excellent job. Alex looked pretty, but not flashy. The hair was obviously hers, which was important. She would definitely be scrutinized tonight, and a wig would be the most obvious tell. She looked more or less credible for the role she'd chosen. Of course, she'd feel more comfortable with no makeup at all. In her experience, that was the way people in this specific role presented themselves, without fuss or vanity. But that was just baggage from her past. She knelt down on the floor beside Einstein. He looked up at her with eyes that were unmistakably pleading. She stroked his muzzle, then rubbed his ears. I'll do everything I can, she promised. I won't come back without him. If I screw this up, Val will take care of you. It will be okay. Einstein's eyes didn't change. They accepted no excuses or consolation prizes. They just begged. I'll try, she vowed. She laid her forehead against his ear for just a moment. Then, with a sigh, she got to her feet. Einstein put his head on his paws and huffed out his own sigh. Val? Alex called. 2 seconds, Val called back. Her voice sounded far away, like she was at the other end of a football field. This bathroom was nice, like the bathroom in a fancy hotel suite, but not insane like Val's other place. Maybe the excess here was saved for the closet. She heard Val shut the closet door and glanced up. She felt a brief jolt of shock at the change, then nodded. That looks about right, she approved. Thanks, Val replied. Some parts of being a spy I could handle. The outfit Val was wearing was not inconspicuous. She had on a long, flowy dress kind of thing that covered her from chin to wrist to floor, similar to a sari but with more coverage. It had scarf-like pieces that cascaded around her, obscuring the shape of her body. It looked like something straight off an avant-garde runway, and probably was. It was memorable, but from behind, all you could see about her body was that she was tall. She wore a thick, dark wig with corkscrew curls that jutted out wildly in every direction. It, too, called attention at the same time that it obscured the shape of her head and covered parts of her face. With the wide-framed black sunglasses she held in her hand, she would be well hidden. Shall we? Val asked. Alex took a deep breath and nodded. Alex parked Val's tacky green Jaguar at a meter on the hill overlooking a large, dingy gray concrete office block. Val had insisted on the green car, a gift from another admirer, naturally. It was the one, she said, that she wouldn't miss if she had to submerge it in a lake. From this angle, Alex could see the entrance to the underground parking garage. It was kind of sad, actually, that Karsten had never moved to a better office. Maybe he liked the depressing surroundings. Maybe it seemed appropriate to the job, and he liked things to conform. Making things easier for Alex had probably not been on his agenda, but it was nice it had worked out this way. She and Val sat in the Jag for more than an hour, Val getting out to feed the meter once. They didn't talk. Alex's mind was miles away, working overtime to think through the flaws in her plan and try to fix them insofar as that was possible. There was so much that had to be left up to chance. She hated chance. Alex imagined Val's mind was in Beijing. It was a good place to run to. Val might even be safe there. Alex wished she and Daniel were getting on a plane to Beijing right now. Daniel probably wasn't enjoying the wait any more than she was. He'd be at the park now, nothing to fill his time until Alex arrived, no way to know what was happening. At least she had Val to sit with, even if neither of them was very good company at the moment. Finally, there was movement below, and she sat up straighter. The white and red striped arm at the mouth of the garage was rising to let someone out. The last two alarms had both been delivery trucks, but this time, a dark sedan was pulling out of the garage. Alex started the engine and rolled out onto the street. Someone honked behind her, but she didn't spare him a glance. She didn't take her eyes off the car. From this distance, it appeared to match Karsten's black BMW. It was only just after 4 o'clock now, not quite time for government employees to be heading out. Here was the first big chance. Once Aaron Karsten Boyd was sure her daughter was missing, she would have called her father in a panic, right? She knew he had some kind of important government job. She would consider him powerful and capable. She wouldn't rely on just the police with her daughter kidnapped. Should it have taken this long? When Alex had last been able to check, no call had come and Karsten was still in his office, managing Kevin's interrogation, no doubt. She thought he would head to his daughter's side. It seemed the only response. But what if Karsten had other options? What if he sent a special ops team instead? Was he that cold? If he had to be, probably yes. But surely Devers could manage the interrogation by himself for a few hours, right? Alex's driving was much more offensive than defensive as she weaved her way forward, refusing to stop for even the pinkest of yellow lights. She knew the two best routes from Karsten's office to the zoo, where she assumed Aaron's call had come from. Would the terrified mother leave the last place she'd seen her daughter before she was positive the child wasn't hiding somewhere in the foliage? If the call came from a police station, of which there were several possible options, Karsten could take a number of different routes. So many things left to chance. The BMW was heading down the correct street, the one she would have chosen as the quickest route to the zoo. He was driving a little erratically as well. She carefully moved up from behind two other cars. She didn't want to spook him. It was the right car. The plates matched. It looked like the back of Karsten's mostly bald head. Alex watched for eyes in the rearview mirror, but he seemed to be focused on the road. She maneuvered into the parallel lane. She supposed she should feel better that this part was going according to plan, but it felt like someone was drilling a wide hole into the bottom of her stomach. She thought she might gag as she pulled alongside his car. Because if this part worked, that meant she had to go forward with the rest of the plan. The light turned yellow ahead. Cars streamed through, but Karsten was slowing. He knew he was too far back to make it. The car in front of him braked too. Alex could have pulled up to the line in her lane. The car in front of her had turned right. Instead, she stopped directly beside Karsten. She waved, her face pointed straight toward his profile. The motion was deliberately large, meant to catch his peripheral vision. Karsten glanced over automatically at the movement, his mind clearly far away, worry making a crinkled mess of his forehead. It took him a second to realize what he was seeing. In that instant of shock, before he could smash down the accelerator, pull a gun, or dial a number, she held up the phone in her hand. She had the image zoomed in on the girl's sleeping face. He locked down his expression as the facts began falling into place. Quickly, she hopped out of her car and reached for the passenger door of his. She didn't look back to watch Val slide over into the driver's seat, but she heard the door close behind her. Alex waited with her fingers on the BMW's passenger door handle until she heard the locks click open. She climbed in next to him. The whole wordless exchange had taken less than 2 seconds. The cars behind them might be curious, but they would probably forget the transfer by the next light. "Turn left," she told Karsten, as Val went right and headed east. The Jag disappeared around the corner. Karsten was quick to recover. He put on his blinker and pulled across the left lane, nearly hitting the van headed through the light. Alex took his phone out of the cup holder, powered it down, and shoved it in her pocket.
"What do you want?"
he asked. His voice sounded calm, but she could hear the strain in his lack of inflection. I need your help. He took a moment to digest that. Turn right at the next corner. He complied carefully.
Who was your partner?
Someone for hire, not your concern.
I really believed you were dead this time.
Alex didn't respond.
What have you done to Livy?
Nothing permanent. Yet.
She's only 3.
His voice quavered uncharacteristically. She turned to give him an incredulous look, which was wasted, as he never glanced away from the road in front of them. Really? You expect me to care about civilians at this point?
She's done nothing to you.
What did 3 innocent people in Texas do to you, Karsten? Never mind, she said, when he opened his mouth to answer. That was obviously rhetorical.
What do you want from me?
Kevin Beach. There was another long pause as he rearranged things in his mind. You're going to turn left at the next block, she instructed.
How did you... He shook his head. I don't have him. The CIA does.
I know who has him, and I know Devers is following your direction in his interrogation, she bluffed. Your specialist is the one leading the case. I'm sure you know where they're working on him. He stared stone-faced through the windshield.
I don't understand what is happening, he muttered.
Let's talk about what you do understand, then, Alex said in a bleak voice. Of course, you remember a little concoction Barnaby and I created for you called Deadline. His pasty skin started to mottle, blotches of puce blooming on his cheeks and neck. She held her phone out, and his eyes flickered to it automatically. The photo was back to its original size now, and the IV hooked into his granddaughter's arm was conspicuously in the foreground. There was a saline bag, the nutrition bag, and a smaller, dark green bag attached underneath it. He stared at the photo for one long second, then his eyes were back on the road.
How long?
He asked through his teeth. I was generous. 12 hours. 1 hour has passed. This operation shouldn't take more than 4, at most. Then Livy is delivered safely back to her mother, no worse for wear.
And I'm dead?
I'll be honest, the odds aren't good that either of us make it through unscathed. A lot is riding on your acting abilities, Karsten. Lucky for you, we both know how convincing you can be.
What happens if, through no fault of mine, you die?
Bad luck for Livy, and her mother, for that matter. Things have been set in motion. If you care about your family, you'll do your very, very best to get me out alive.
You could be bluffing. You were never this cold-blooded.
Policies change. People change. Shall I share a secret? She gave him a moment to respond, but he just stared straight ahead with his jaw locked. Kevin Beach wasn't in Texas when Devers sent the kill squad. I was. She let those 2 words hang in the air for a moment before she went on. Karsten wasn't the only one with acting abilities. I'm not the person you used to know, Karsten. You'd be surprised at the things I'm capable of now. Take the next right.
I don't know what you hope to accomplish here.
Let's get down to it, Alex said. Where is Kevin? Karsten didn't hesitate.
He's in a facility west of the city. It used to be a CIA interrogation suite, but they haven't used it in years. Officially, it's abandoned.
The address? He listed it from memory without a pause. What kind of security? He glanced over, his eyes studying her for a second before he responded.
I don't have that information, but knowing Devers, it's more than is necessary. He'll go overboard. He's terrified of Kevin Beach. That's why he came up with the whole charade with the brother. No risk. That's what he called it.
Karsten chuckled once. It was a bitter sound, in no way amused. Does he know my face? Karsten's eyes jerked to her in surprise.
You're going in?
Will he recognize me? She demanded. How much of my file did he see? Did you show him the footage from the metro? Karsten pursed his lips.
We agreed from the beginning to keep our situation separate. It was need to know. Years ago, he would have had access to your old recruitment file, your write-ups from a few interrogations. He might still have those, but nothing more current.
The only picture in that old file was from your mother's funeral. You were very young. Your hair was longer and darker.
He paused, seeming lost in thought.
Devers isn't a detail guy. I doubt he'd be able to link you to the picture. You don't look that much like 19-year-old Juliana Fortis anymore.
She hoped he was right.
It's more than my life on the line, she reminded him.
I'm aware. And that much is a bet I'd take. But I don't know what you think you're going to do when you get inside.
We, Carson. We. And probably we go down in a hail of bullets.
And Livy pays? That's not acceptable, he growled.
Then give me more to work with.
He took a deep breath, and she glanced over at him. He looked exhausted.
How about this? She suggested.
She was going on intuition. She'd listened to Karsten's aggravation with that one particular him in the phone calls, and she thought she could guess who it was. After all, it was Deaver's plan that had failed so spectacularly over and over.
Would it be accurate to characterize you as unhappy with Deaver's management of this joint operation?
He grunted.
Have you and Devers disagreed on how to proceed?
You could say that.
Does he think that you trust him to handle the interrogation of Kevin Beach?
No. At this point, I would say he does not believe that I trust him to zip up his own fly correctly.
Tell me about your interrogation specialist. Karsten made a sour face.
Not mine. He's Devers' lackey, and he's an imbecile. I told Devers that someone like Beach was going to die before he talked to an ordinary interrogator. You can rest easy if that's your concern. They won't break him. Beach hasn't said anything about you except that he killed you. I don't think they even followed up on that. To be fair, I believed it too.
She was surprised. So you never replaced me?
Karsten shook his head.
I've tried. I wasn't lying about that in the beginning, you remember? True talent is a limited commodity.
He quoted himself and sighed.
Devers has had a stranglehold on the department for years now, ever since I lost a dangerous asset. The CIA has blocked my recruitment process and shut down all but the lab. The things we're producing now could be created by any halfway decent pharmacist.
He shook his head.
They act as if they aren't the reason why you're dangerous in the first place.
You still pretend you weren't part of that decision?
If I had been, I'm being punished for it now.
Karsten stared morosely through the windshield.
Would Devers be shocked to learn that you were developing talent on the side?
Karsten was always quick. He pursed his lips and nodded as he talked it through.
For about half a second, then he'll just be angry. He's 100% on board with the current program, but he knows my doubts have been increasing. No, he won't be that surprised.
You don't like how Pace gets things done? He seems like a pragmatic person. I thought you'd get along.
So you did put it together. I thought you might.
But I'll bet you never would have if Pace hadn't overreacted in the first place.
Machiavellianism doesn't bother me. Stupidity does. Mistakes happen, but Pace has a penchant for compounding one error with a second that's worse, and then a third. He's put us all in this mess.
What are you saying, Karsten? That we're on the same side? Everybody makes mistakes, like you said, but you shouldn't rely on my gullibility again.
I don't expect you to believe me, but it is what it is. I have nothing to gain from the current agenda. If Pace succeeds, Devers' star will rise. He'll end up director of the CIA. My life's work is already being dismantled. We're more on the same side than you know.
If it makes you happy to say so, it doesn't change the plan.
We go in together, he mused. You're my secret protege. I insist that you take over for Devers' butcher. It can work up to that point. I don't know what you think happens then.
She tried to hide her flinch when Karsten said the word butcher. So much depended on how much was left of Kevin.
We'll see, she said, working to keep her voice smooth.
No, don't tell me. That's smart. Just as long as you have a plan.
She didn't answer. Her plan wasn't strong enough.
Just out of curiosity, she asked, trying to distract Karsten from her reaction. When did Dominic Haugen die?
2 weeks after the lab in Jammu was destroyed.
She nodded. Then it was as she'd suspected. Barnaby had seen something and begun his preparations.
I have an idea, Karsten volunteered.
This should be good.
How do you feel about faking some injuries? A sling, maybe. We had a situation in Turkey 9 days ago. Got some good information from a quick-thinking corporal. Exactly the kind of person I would have been interested in recruiting, but the situation went dark. The corporal didn't survive the hostile forces' rescue attempt, but maybe the information was actually acquired by my secret side project who did make it out alive.
She stared at him. He held a hand up, as if in surrender.
Okay, we don't have to do it my way. It was just an idea. Devers knows the story. It would make my bringing you in feel anchored, less spur of the moment.
I think I can manage some injuries, Alex said dryly. They'd gone over the story a few times before they reached the rendezvous point, and he described the interrogation room in detail. It wasn't a pretty picture, and she felt their chances for survival getting more bleak. Karsten pulled into the lot attached to the small municipal park and stopped the Beamer next to the only other car in the lot, as directed. It gave Alex a start, even though she was expecting it, to see the big blonde man waiting on the park bench. This was the first test, and if Daniel didn't pass, she was pulling the plug. Karsten had surely seen the photos of Daniel on the news, no matter how separate he and Devers had kept their operations. She watched Karsten from the corner of her eye, assessing his reaction. His face was a blank.
Who's this?
He asked. Your new aide.
Is that necessary?
Cut the engine. Daniel got up and walked quickly toward them. Alex watched Karsten for any change in expression as Daniel approached. I can't watch you every second, Karsten, she said sweetly. Pop the trunk. She and Karsten waited in silence as Daniel moved the gear from the back of the sedan into the BMW's cargo space. When he was done, he stood beside Karsten's door, waiting. Get out, Alex said. Slowly, always keeping his hands in view, Karsten opened the door and stepped out. As Alex got out, she saw the way he was eyeing Daniel. She tried to appraise Daniel impartially. He was a large man and looked able to handle himself, even with the glasses and the extra paunch. It made sense under these circumstances that Karsten would be cautious and probably frightened, though he hid it well. As instructed, Daniel said nothing. He met Alex's eyes only briefly and kept his expression neutral. His jaw jutted out just a bit, the way it had when he'd intimidated the drunk boys in Oklahoma City. It made him look dangerous, but also slightly more like Kevin. Had Karsten seen photos of Kevin? Daniel stopped beside the driver's door, his arms loose at his sides, ready. Hands on the roof, Alex ordered Karsten. Don't move until I get back. Karsten assumed the position of a suspect braced against a police car. He kept his head down, but Alex could tell he was examining what he could see of Daniel in the window's reflection. There was no sign of recognition, but Alex couldn't be sure if Karsten was hiding his response. Alex was distracted by the way the parking lights glinted off their bald heads in the same spots. This is Mr. Thomas, she told Karsten. If you try to give me away, or escape, or hurt me, you'll be dead in approximately 2.5 seconds. A bead of sweat was forming at Karsten's temple. If he was faking that, she was truly impressed.
I'm not going to do anything to endanger Livy, he snapped.
Good. I'll be right back. I'm going to go give myself some injuries. Daniel's bright blue eyes flickered to her when she said the word injuries. He forced them back to Karsten. All her things were neatly stowed in the cargo hold of the BMW. She unzipped the first aid duffel bag and rummaged around quickly till she found what she needed, then cut off a short section of gauze and tape. She grabbed her handbag and turned away, leaving the trunk open. The public restroom was just on the other side of the little playground. She walked quickly to the ladies' room and turned on the lights. There was no counter, and nothing had been cleaned in days, maybe weeks, so she kept the bag on her shoulder. She used the gritty powdered soap to scrub off Val's lovely makeup job. It was better this way. The makeup was out of character, and the patch of fake skin would have been a red flag to anyone who looked closely. Her bruises and bandages would draw attention, obviously, but they would also make her less recognizable. People would be less likely to examine the face underneath. She was happy to see the remnants of her black eyes, the yellow shape of the lingering bruise on her cheek. The glue job on her jaw was too amateur, but a normal person would keep it bandaged regardless. There were no towels, just a broken air dryer. She used her t-shirt to dry her face, then taped the gauze to her jaw and ear, taking the extra seconds to do the job right, so it looked like a doctor had done it. Her black t-shirt and thick leggings worked. Comfortable clothes were part of the job, and the lab coat in the trunk would give her the professional appearance she wanted. As she walked back to the car in the encroaching darkness, she could hear Karsten trying to engage Daniel, but Daniel was staring down at the man with his lips tightly closed. Alex retrieved the lab coat from the trunk and put it on, then ran her palms down the front of it to smooth out the folds. When she was satisfied, she shut the trunk and opened the back door. "At ease, Lowell," she told Karsten. He straightened up warily. "You'll ride with me in the back. Mr. Thomas will drive."
"Taciturn fellow,"
Karsten commented as he ducked in through the open door. "He's not here to entertain you. He's here to keep you in line." Alex shut the door behind him, then walked around the car to climb in the other side. Karsten stared at her.
"Your face. That's very realistic work, Jules. Subtle. It doesn't look like you're wearing any makeup at all now."
"I've developed many new skills, and the name is Dr. Jordan Reed. Please direct Mr. Thomas to our destination. When we're 5 minutes out, you get your phone back." Her eyes met Daniel's in the mirror. He gave one tiny shake of his head. Karsten hadn't said anything to make Daniel think he'd been recognized during the time they were alone. Daniel started the engine. Karsten gave him the address and a short set of directions. Daniel nodded once. Karsten turned to Alex and asked,
"I assume someone is with Livy now?"
"Assumptions are never a safe bet. You know that."
"If I do my best, Jules, if I do everything I can," Karsten began.
His voice was suddenly raw.
"Please, please let Livy go. Make the call, whatever you have to do, even if you're not getting out. I know you have every reason to hurt me, but please, not the baby."
He was only whispering by the end. She rather thought he was speaking from the heart, as much as he had one. "I can't do anything for her if I don't make it out. I'm sorry, Karsten. I wish I could have done things differently, but I didn't have the time or the resources." He clenched his hands in his lap and stared at them.
"You better know what you're doing."
She didn't answer. He probably could guess what that meant.
"If we go down," he said,
his voice stronger,
"at least take that bastard Devers with us. Can you do that?"
"I'll make a point of it."
"We're 5 minutes out, approximately."
"Okay, here." Alex handed Karsten his phone. He turned it on, then, after a second, selected a number from his address book. The phone rang twice over the car speaker.
"Why are you interrupting me?"
a man answered. His voice was pitched to be quiet, almost a whisper, but Alex could hear that it was a deep baritone. He sounded annoyed. Karsten was annoyed, too.
"I'm assuming there's been no progress." "I don't have time for this." "None of us have time for this," Karsten snapped. "Enough is enough. I'll be at the gate in 2 minutes. Make sure they're expecting me and my assistants." "What?"
Deaver started, but Karsten hung up. "Combative," Alex commented.
"It's our normal form of interaction."
"I hope so."
"I'll do my part, Jules. If Livy weren't involved, I think I would actually enjoy this. I'm so tired of that pompous fool."
The building they pulled up to would have looked abandoned if there weren't two cars parked beside the entrance. The small lot was protected by steep, man-made hills that surrounded it on three sides, the unassuming one-story concrete building taking up the fourth. The front of the building wasn't visible until you were already in the lot. The location was hidden in the middle of miles of warehouses and Soviet block-style office buildings, all certainly owned by some arm of the government and all seemingly empty. as was the maze of roads weaving through them. She doubted anyone would wander back here by accident, and she was glad she'd had Karsten to guide them through the maze. She hoped Daniel had paid attention. She'd tried to memorize the route, but it was unlikely she'd be there to guide him back out. There were no lights in the small shaded windows, but that was expected. The ground floor was nothing but camouflage. Karsten got out and came around to hold the car door for her, already acting his role. She almost smiled, remembering what it had been like when she had been the talent. Well, that was her part to play tonight. She would have to get into character. Daniel pulled the steel toolbox on rollers out of the trunk and brought it around to her. Someone was probably already watching, though she couldn't see where the cameras were hidden. "Careful with that," she admonished in a stern tone, taking the handle from him. She straightened her left cuff and brushed an imaginary speck of dust off her sleeve. Daniel went to stand just behind Karsten's right shoulder. She noticed the gold pinky ring. It didn't quite fit the picture, but the rest of him did. Even in the dark lot, his black suit looked just right, conservative, not expensive. Every FBI agent in the country had something exactly like it in his or her closet. No badge, but then anyone working as an aide to this department wouldn't be expected to carry identification. It wasn't a badge kind of organization. She squared her shoulders and faced the dark building, trying to come to terms with the fact that she'd probably never see this ugly parking lot again. Chapter 30.
"This way, Dr. Reed,"
Karsten said, and he led them to a blank gray door. Daniel stayed close on his heels, his back to Alex. She walked briskly behind them, struggling to keep up with her shorter legs. Karsten didn't knock on the door. He merely stood directly in front of it, expectant, like he'd already rung the bell. The door opened a second after Karsten planted himself. The man who answered it wore a suit not unlike Daniel's, though this man's was so new it still had a sheen on it. He was shorter than Daniel and wider through the shoulders. There was an obvious bulge under his left arm.
"Sir,"
the man said, and saluted Karsten. His hair was high and tight, and she guessed he'd feel more at home in a uniform, but his appearance was still part of the camouflage. The uniforms would be downstairs.
"At ease. I need to see Devers immediately."
"Yes, sir. He informed us you'd be arriving. This way."
The soldier turned abruptly and paced inside. She followed Daniel into a drab office space, gray carpet, a few tight cubicles, some uncomfortable-looking chairs. The door closed behind her with a solid-sounding thud and an ominous click. No doubt someone was still watching. She couldn't afford a glance back to look at the lock. She would have to hope it was meant to keep people out and not in. It hadn't taken the soldier long to open the door to them. The soldier turned sharply down a dim hallway, took them past several darkened rooms with open doors, then stopped at the very end. There was a door there labeled Janitorial Supplies. He reached into his left sleeve and pulled out a spiral cord with a key. He unlocked the door and led the way inside. The room was dimly lit by an emergency exit sign over another door opposite the first. Mops and buckets lined the wall, presumably for show. The soldier opened the emergency door, revealing a featureless metal-lined box, an elevator. She'd known to expect this. She hoped Daniel was controlling his expressions. They joined the soldier in the elevator. When she turned to face the doors, she saw that there were only two buttons. He pressed the bottom one, and she felt the descent begin immediately. She couldn't be sure, but it felt like at least three floors. Not entirely necessary, but definitely disconcerting. Though this building had not been used for the same kind of interrogations she had conducted, it would still be part of the routine to make the subject feel alarmed and isolated. It worked. She felt an increase in both. The elevator came to an abrupt halt, and the doors opened on a brightly lit anteroom. It looked like an airport security post, only much less crowded and more colorless. There were two more men, these in dark blue army uniforms, and a standard metal detector with a short counter and even the little plastic trays for belt buckles and car keys. The uniforms made Alex think these must be Pace's men. The surveillance cameras were very obvious in this room. Karsten moved forward, impatient and sure of himself. He put his phone in the tray and a handful of change. Then he stalked through the square frame. Daniel moved quickly behind him, putting the car keys in another tray, then retrieving Karsten's belongings and handing them back to him before reclaiming the keys for himself. Alex wheeled the steel toolbox to the side of the detector. "I'm afraid you'll have to search that by hand," she said, as she walked through the frame. "I have a lot of metal tools. Please be careful. Some of my things are breakable and some are pressurized." The two soldiers looked at each other, obviously uncertain. They looked at her damaged face, then at her toolbox. The taller one knelt down to open the top compartment, while the shorter one stared at her face again. "Please be careful," she repeated. "Those syringes are delicate." The short soldier watched now as the tall soldier lifted the top tray of syringes, only to find an identical tray below it. He carefully replaced it, not checking the two trays beneath. He opened the second compartment, then looked up quickly at his companion, then at Karsten.
"Sir, we aren't supposed to let weapons pass this point."
"Of course I'll need my scalpels," Alex said, letting some irritation bleed into her tone. "I'm not here to play Scrabble." The soldiers looked at her again, understanding beginning to dawn in their eyes. "Yes," she wanted to say. "I'm that kind of guest." They might have read the words in her expression. The tall one straightened up.
"We're going to have to get authorization for this."
He turned on his heel and strode through the metal double doors behind them. Karsten huffed out a big, exasperated breath and folded his arms across his chest. Alex schooled her expression into one of impatience. Daniel stood very still by Karsten's right shoulder, his face blank. He was doing well. No one had paid him any attention at all so far. To the soldiers, he was just one of those anonymous briefcase holders, which was exactly what she'd hoped for. Val was right thus far. They would have paid much more attention to her. It was only a few minutes before the doors opened again. The tall soldier was back with two other men. It was easy to tell which was Devers. He was smaller and more gaunt than the voice had suggested, but he moved with an obvious authority. He didn't watch to see where the other men walked. He expected them to move around him. He wore a well-cut black suit, several pay grades in price and style above what Daniel and the door guard were wearing. His hair was steel gray, but still thick. From his lack of formality, Alex guessed the man behind Devers was the interrogator. He was dressed in a rumpled t-shirt and black pants that looked like scrubs. His lank brown hair was greasy and disheveled. There were substantial bags under his bloodshot eyes. Though he'd obviously had a long day, there was fire in those eyes as he focused on her lab coat, then her toolbox, the scalpel tray still exposed.
"What is this, Karsten?" he blustered.
Neither Karsten nor Devers looked at him. Their eyes were focused on each other.
"What do you think you're doing?"
Devers asked in an even voice.
"I'm not going to let that hack kill the subject when I have a better option."
Devers looked at her for the first time. She tried to project calm, but she felt her heart racing as he examined her, his eyes lingering on the damage to her face. He turned back to Karsten.
"And where did you suddenly get this better option?"
At least he hadn't recognized her immediately, and he hadn't looked at Daniel. The two men were focused on each other again, antagonism running between them like an electric current.
"I've been developing alternatives to save the program. This alternative has already proven herself more than capable." "Proven how?"
Karsten's chin moved up an inch.
"Uldere."
The current seemed to break on that word. Devers took an unconscious step back and blew out an annoyed breath. He looked at Alex's injuries again, then at his adversary.
"I should have known there was more going on in Turkey. Karsten, this is beyond your authority. I am currently being underutilized, just trying to make myself more valuable."
Devers pursed his lips and glanced back at her again.
"She's good?"
"You'll see," Karsten promised.
"But I'm at a critical point,"
the interrogator protested. You can't pull me off the case now. Carson gave him a withering glance.
Shut up, Lindauer. You're out of your league. All right,
Deaver said sourly.
Let's see if your better option can get us what we need.
The room was as Karsten had described. Plain, concrete walls, plain, concrete floor. One door, a large one-way mirror between this and the observation room, a round overhead light flush with the ceiling. At one time, there would have been a desk in this room, two chairs, and a very bright desk lamp. Subjects would have been questioned, harangued, threatened, and pressured. But that would have been the extent of it. Now, a surgical table took the place of the desk. It was like something from a World War I movie, one solid piece of unpadded stainless steel with the kind of wheels a gurney had. There was a folding chair in the corner. This facility was nowhere near as functional as the state-of-the-art suites back at the department, but clearly, this interrogation was off even the most covert section's records. She kept her inspection clinical and prayed that Daniel would have the restraint necessary for this. Daniel had accompanied Karsten and the others into the observation room, and he was invisible to her behind the glass. Before the group divided, neither Devers nor any of the others had looked at his face. She desperately hoped he would do nothing now to change their indifference to suspicion. Kevin lay on the table under the one light, handcuffed and shackled in place. He was naked, his body gleaming wet with sweat and blood. Long burns blistered a multitude of uneven parallel lines down his chest. Thin slices ran up his ribs, ragged skin blanched at the edges, probably with acid. The soles of his feet were covered in blisters, and bleached white as well. Lindauer had poured acid into those burns. Kevin was missing another toe on his left foot, the one next to the first stump. Lindauer's tools littered the floor, messy with blood and his dirty handprints. She knew there was a toe down there, too, but she couldn't find it at first glance. She'd expected a clean, clinical setup. That was what she was used to. This was savagery. Her nose wrinkled in disgust. Kevin was alert. He watched her as she walked in behind the interrogator, his face tightly controlled. With a precision meant to mock Lindauer's unprofessional work habits, she bent to her toolbox and carefully laid out a few of her syringe trays.
"What's this?" Kevin asked hoarsely.
She glanced up automatically to see that he was addressing the mirror, not her.
"You think a little girl can break me? I thought this flunky was the low. Honestly, you guys never cease to disappoint."
Lindauer, who had insisted on being in the room, leaned furiously over the table. He jammed one finger into a slash wound that cut across a burn on Kevin's chest. Kevin grunted and clenched his jaw.
"Don't worry, Mr. Beach. The little girl is just a nice rest period for you. Get your strength back. I'll return later, and then we'll have some productive conversations."
"Enough, doctor," Alex snapped in a ringing tone. "I agreed to let you observe, but you will kindly step away from my subject now." Lindauer glanced at the mirror as if expecting backup. When he got only silence in response, he frowned sullenly and went to sit in the lone chair. Once he was down, he seemed to collapse a little, whether from exhaustion or disgrace, she couldn't tell. Alex turned her back on Lindauer and pulled on a pair of blue latex gloves. The small piece of metal she'd palmed in the process was invisible beneath the right glove. She stepped to the edge of the table, gingerly clearing a swath in Lindauer's mess with one foot. "Hello, Mr. Beach. How are you feeling?"
"Good to go a few more rounds, sweetheart. Looks like somebody already had a nice time with you, huh? Hope it was fun for him."
While he spit the words through his teeth, she began examining him, shining a small flashlight in his eyes and then assessing the veins in his arms and hands. "A little dehydrated, I think," she said. She looked directly at the mirror while she put his right hand back on the table, leaving the thin key under his palm. "I assumed there would be an IV in place. Could I get a pole, please? I have my own saline and needles."
"I'll bet you know your way around a pole," Kevin said.
"No need to be crass, Mr. Beach. Now that I'm here, things will be much more civilized." I do apologize for the current conditions. This is all very unprofessional. She sniffed scornfully, giving Lindauer her most cutting side-eye. He looked away.
Honey, if this is the good cop routine, sorry, but you're not really my type.
I assure you, Mr. Beach, I am not the good cop. I am a specialist, and I should warn you now, I won't play the same silly games this interrogator. The desire to use a less flattering word was clear in her inflection. Has wasted your time with. We'll get down to business immediately.
Yeah, sugar. Let's get down to business. That's what I'm talking about.
Kevin tried to keep his voice loud and his tone derisive, but she could see the effort it was costing him. The door opened behind her. She watched in the mirror as the tall soldier brought in an IV pole. So far, she'd seen only four others besides Devers and Lindauer, but there were probably more hidden from view. Just put that at the head of the table, thank you, she said without turning to look at him, voice dismissive. She'd bent to retrieve the syringe she wanted.
You gonna dance for me now?
Kevin muttered. She looked at Kevin coldly as she straightened. This will be just a sample of what we'll be doing tonight, she told him as she circled the table. She placed the syringe by his head while she hung the saline bag and the tubing. The door closed, but she didn't look away from Kevin. She examined his veins again, then chose his left arm. He didn't resist. While she carefully inserted the needle, she tried to spy the key she'd given him, but it was nowhere in sight. She picked up the largest blade she could see on the floor and laid it next to his right arm. You see, I don't need such crude weapons. I have something better. I always think it's fairer to let the subject understand what he's up against before I go full strength. Let me know what you think.
I'll tell you what I think, you...
Kevin launched into an avalanche of profanity that put all his previous creative descriptions to shame. The man had a talent. I appreciate your bravery, really I do, Alex said when he was done. She held the point of the syringe against the IV port. But please know, it's a wasted effort. Playtime is over. She stabbed the needle through the plastic and depressed the plunger. The response was nearly immediate. She heard his breathing accelerate, and then he started shrieking. Lindauer's head snapped up. She could tell he'd never gotten a reaction like this from Kevin, despite his best efforts. She heard movement behind the glass as the audience edged closer and the faint murmur of voices. She thought she could pick out a surprised tone, and it was gratifying, though honestly it was all due to Kevin's acting. She knew how he would be feeling now as the strength raced through his veins and all the pain vanished. She'd used more than double the highest dose of Survive she'd ever used on herself, taking into account his greater mass and need. His screams were primal, almost triumphant. She